Hi there, listeners. It's Farnoosh, and I just want to say I'm really honored that you've chosen to subscribe to So Money. I know there are a lot of podcasts out there. The fact that you're here is not lost on me. Now, if you're enjoying these episodes and you're benefiting from the advice and you want more, I've actually created something really special for us. It's called the So Money Members Club. It's an online platform where you can connect more closely with me and engage with fellow So Money fans who want to become more empowered in their financial lives. The website is SoMoneyMembers.com. And when you go there, you'll learn all the benefits, including exclusive monthly finance workshops, private group calls with me. You get your questions answered in our member community. I'm often in there weighing in, and you get instant access to all of our workshop recordings. We have a robust library that's growing. So far, we've had workshops on investing in real estate, kids and money, and how to earn more in 2024. And most of all, it's fun, positive, encouraging, all the things personal finance should be. Go to SoMoneyMembers.com, and I hope you'll join us. I'm limiting enrollment, and doors will close soon. Check out SoMoneyMembers.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 1532, founder Mariam Nafisi on remaking yourself, navigating naysayers, and the future of blockchain and AI.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
Having everything wiped out when you're 40 and starting 100% from zero, that was sort of their life and their stress. And then I was dealing with the school stress. So it was tumultuous, I would say, but it was a very good learning experience because for me, I just went to my strength and stuck with my strength, which at that point was really my intellectual strengths. Like I was thinking, okay, I'm going to invest in this brain, and this brain is going to get me out of this situation. That's how I thought about it, which was, I have this one thing this is one thing I can control. It's my brain.
Welcome to So Money, everybody. I'm Farnoosh Torabi. We're welcoming today guest Mariam Nafisi. She is a veteran entrepreneur who has founded and scaled successful companies, including Eve.com, the world's first online cosmetics retailer, Minted, the online marketplace of premium design goods created by independent artists and designers, and Tonic XYZ, a curated fine art gallery focused on blockchain art. Today, Mariam is the founder and managing partner of Heretic Ventures, the San Francisco-based venture studio that founds companies at the intersection of culture, commerce, and creators. On our show, we talk about how Mariam was born to Iranian and Chinese parents, how her childhood in diverse countries shaped her perspective. She talks about overcoming a lot of adversity when her family fled Iran during the 1979 revolution and faced challenges upon arriving in the U.S. On the show, Mariam shares her tactics for closing deals, offers advice for those of us seeking venture capital, Capital, and because of her keen eye for innovative ideas, had to ask her for her insights on crypto, blockchain, NFTs, and of course, artificial intelligence. Join us as we explore her journey, her resilience, and Miriam's transformative ideas. Miriam Nafisi, welcome to So Money. I have wanted to have you on the show. You don't know this for a long time, but you're quite busy. So I'm happy and grateful that you're making time for us now.
I'm so happy to be here. Very, very honored.
Yes. I mean, the reason really is for so many reasons. I want to learn from you as someone who's such a phenomenal business leader, creator, innovator, entrepreneur, but someone who also has a very storied background. Maybe we could start there with your childhood. I was reading about how you are a daughter of Iranian and Chinese parents. I'm an Iranian, mother and father. And you spent your years in many countries growing up, including Egypt, Iran, Tanzania. That's pretty extraordinary for anybody. I can't imagine a young child experiencing that. And what do you remember most about those early years traveling and being all over the world?
A lot of very hot sunshine. I was living in very hot countries. My dad was a development economist with the United Nations Development Project, and then subsequently the Department of Agriculture. He's an agricultural department economist with the Iranian Department of Agriculture. And then after that, the USAID, Agency for International Development. So that took us around the world to Kuwait, Lebanon, Tanzania, Iran, and Egypt. And I just remember, I would say there was this mixture of a lot of happiness and joy in really interesting countries. And I was really kind of a tourist, if you will. I was either at British or American schools the whole time, but I got enough of a sense. I would stay long enough to really feels, you know, sort of embedded in each country. And it was a mixture of joy and inspiration with sometimes, you know, very tumultuous things happening and a little bit of fear and instability, actually. Yeah.
Was that fear mostly when you moved to the States during the revolution and the Iranian revolution? I was actually reading about your commencement speech at Northeastern recently. You touched on this. Your family escaping Iran during the 79 revolution. My parents also left around that same time. Fear, I say, was sort of it was great. I mean, got us out of the country, got them out of the country. But of course, different set of challenges when they got here. What were those early years for you and your family like with those difficulties in the States?
Well, I mean, honestly, we had gotten here right after the revolution. We left. The exit itself was pretty, I would say, difficult in the sense that the country started deteriorating while we were there, and we were at the American school in Tehran. And for example, the school was tear gassed, and we were going through a lot of We would get stuck in crowds. You know, protests were happening. And finally, we decided to leave, but my dad stayed behind thinking it was only a temporary situation, but it was not a temporary situation at all. I would say that finally, when we got out here, we went to Washington, D.C., but it was the middle of the hostage crisis. So I think, understandably, which was a terrible thing that happened, people were afraid, and they were afraid of Iran. They were afraid of Iranians, and so there was a lot of, I would say, daily, you know, bullying and discrimination at school, for example, and then also, of course, the financial difficulties were very high because we had left everything behind, and my dad was not very employable as an Iranian citizen because nobody really wanted to hire him into these, you know, U.S. government contracts. So it was only after he naturalized and became an American citizen that he was able to be hired again and start earning again. But so they basically, you know, imagine having everything wiped out when you're 40 and starting 100% from zero. That was sort of their life and their stress. And then I was dealing with the school stress. So it was tumultuous, I would say, but it was a very good learning experience because for me, I just went to my strength and stuck with my strength, which at that point was really my intellectual strengths. Like my best friend was my I was thinking, okay, I'm going to invest in this brain, you know, and the brain of this brain is going to get me out of this situation. That's how I thought about it, which was, you know, I have this one thing this is one thing I can control. It's my brain. There's only one thing I can really control. And that's what it came down to for me. So school, I worked really hard at school and did well.
Yes. Yes. I just interviewed Firuzeh Dumas, who is an Iranian writer, and her family immigrated here a little bit earlier than the revolution, but still echoed a lot of what the sentiments, you know, this sort of like, you just have to, you're surviving, you know, here and trying to assimilate. How was the sort of assimilation for you as someone who, yes, is Iranian, but also Chinese, mm-hmm. and now also American, and really you're like a citizen of the world because you've traveled your background. What did you feel most attached to in terms of your identity as a kid, and how did that maybe change as you got older and gained more agency in your life?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that. I don't think anyone's actually ever asked me that before. And I would say that when I was in Iran, I was also an outsider because I was half Chinese. You know, I wasn't really pure Iranian, and nobody really saw me as Iranian there. My family was wonderful to me. I had a huge extended family and loved going to those multi-generational get-togethers with the huge piles of like food on these large tables. I mean, if only people here could really see how beautiful it was. I mean, imagine grandparents, parents, children running around in these massive parties, doors opening out into the garden in Tehran, you know, on a summer night. It was magical. But I was also still a tourist. I was an American tourist going through this because I wasn't really, you know, fully Iranian, you know, so I could observe from an outsider's perspective. And, when I got to the States, I was really confused. I'm half Chinese. I don't really know anyone in Washington, D.C. who is half Chinese. There was like basically nobody. I knew no one who was half Asian. It was only when I came to California that I saw all these half Asian people, and I thought, my gosh, I found all of these people just like me, you know. But at that time, you didn't even know what to call yourself, you know, if you were half kind of biracial, if you will. There was not really the vocabulary in school. People didn't know what to make of you. So I'm really happy to have two great cultures. They battle over rice, actually. So, you know, the Chinese really like short grain, sticky rice, and the Persians love long grain, fluffy rice. But it's two cultures that actually have a lot in common, I would say. They love education. They're very, you know, there's just a ton in common between my parents, who are deep intellectuals. And I'm just very grateful that I can appreciate both of those cultures. So I do feel like I'm a person of the world, you know, a citizen of the world. United Nations in our own house is kind of how I would describe it.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or problem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a double A cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code PODCAST15. The weather's getting warmer as I record. It's a nice 73 degrees on the East Coast. So, finally, time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and, fingers crossed, hello to shorts and tees. And I need to update my wardrobe for the long haul. And, you know, I don't want to spend a fortune. So luckily, I found Quince. I'm honest. I've got a lineup of timeless pieces from Quince that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm talking premium European linen dresses, blouses and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and tons more. Best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. I have t-shirts from Quince, pajamas from Quince. My very chic and fashionable sister-in-law, Hannah, her whole closet is Quince. And people often stop us and ask, where did you get this? Don't tell me the price. And then when I do, they're shopping on Quince.com. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to Quince.com/sewmoney for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince.com/sewmoney to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/sewmoney. And how do you talk about crediting your intellect as helping you navigate the challenges of your youth? Obviously, that served you as well as you went on to build multi-million dollar companies, many of them, and now your latest venture, Heretic Ventures. I'm just curious, what else helped you in your adult life besides academia? What else do we need to become you? You know what I mean? Like, there's intellect, but I would guess too that having this worldly experience, you have an immediate sense of how to read a room. You're really good at reading people. You know how to adjust and almost be a chameleon no matter where you are, because you've have this sort of privilege of having been in all these different rooms and experiences throughout your since childhood.
Yeah.
So maybe open up a little bit of that too, is like the ingredients that went into building the life that you have now as an entrepreneur.
Yes. I think that's great that you're asking that. I think it's, I would say empathy and, empathy and basically being able to, see things from the outside, from an outside perspective, are very valuable. I think that the, you know, for example, in Egypt, I was at the American School in Cairo, and all of my friends were from all over the U.S. They were mostly military, children of military or active military, or children of people in the oil business. And so my friends were from Texas, South Carolina, North Dakota, from all over the U.S. I actually got to know the U.S. better in the American School in Cairo than I did in the U.S., funny enough, because there were people from all over the U.S. and I would go to their homes, and it was like seeing the entire country in this tiny school. And I really learned how to, like you say, morph into different cultures and really try to fit in and try to, and to this day, I'm just very, very comfortable hitting the sort of like the pavement. For example, building Minted's design community meant getting to know designers from all over the country and going into their homes and having meetups. And I'm really comfortable with that sort of on the ground community development. And I really credit that to the school experience of being in this like school with lots and lots of Americans from very different backgrounds. So that I think that chameleon like thing has helped. I think learning how to read people is something that I would say is one of the most important things to try to develop early. And you can practice this. Everyone can practice this. You can start to sort of build your theses about people and how to read them and experiment quietly on your own, even when you're pretty young. You know, we have to make some really important decisions, like who are we going to marry? That unfortunately happens very young in your life. Like, thank God, I feel very lucky that I really lucked out with my husband, that I was able to read him correctly. I met him when I was 19, you know, in college. Sometimes people meet very young and they have to make decisions like that, that are very consequential. And so I always tell people, if you can, one of my favorite things to do now is to look at a person and try to figure them out like a puzzle. It's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating and very like intriguing. So when I meet people, I mean, let's say I'm interviewing people for a job or I'm just talking to them at a cocktail party, my mind is going, you know, on that, trying to figure out what makes them tick, what motivates them, you know, and is there any pattern or anything that I've seen in someone else that maybe reminds me a little bit, that gives me some insight into this new person? So that, I think if you could develop that skill early, that will bode very well and that's what happened to me. I met some really interesting people when I was in my early 20s in the Bay Area. I sort of would say, I really think that person is going to succeed. You know, I think this person is going to be an incredible success. And if I recognized that early and, you know, I would gravitate towards people who I really felt were inspiring, that helped me develop an incredible network that has benefited me to this day. I would try to figure out who I thought I really respected and who I thought was going to do very well and who I liked. Who do I trust? Integrity is also super important, you know, in trying to read people. Like reading the venture capitalists who made offers to my first company, Eve.com, my partner and I, we were thinking a lot about who we could trust. And that we would turn down bigger names, bigger name VC firms, to trade off to get somebody that we thought would be more trustworthy. And that really helped us, because when it came time to sell the company at the height of the, right before the whole market crashed, we wanted to sell the business and our venture capitalists backed us on that decision. Yeah. So you're talking about, I think, the right things.
I'm the one learning from you. I'm hearing that instinct is really important, to cultivate instinct as early on as possible and to not be afraid to execute on that instinct. Sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong, but you have to go through the process to figure out the way and to get better at reading people. When you are evaluating a business idea, let's moving now into more of your VC side mm-hmm. of your work, and someone's pitching you. It's a very tough environment right now, I would say. I think we can all agree that the environment, the economic environment's tight. And so with that backdrop, you're going into it for a pitch meeting. What do you look for in addition to a great idea? Are you again reading that person?
Yeah, I think it's a balance, just like you've put it. You know, now granted, at Heretic, we incubate businesses mostly. We do make some investments as well. And I think we're going to probably increase go fundraise, because we're getting so much deal flow coming through our studio right now that, because of what we do, we're ending up meeting a lot of people that we could invest in, which is great. The things we look for are, you know, a large total addressable market, a large TAM. We look for potentially surprises, like positive surprises, positive growth trends in the business. So like it might look a little smaller now, but there's a growth trend that will make it an industry of the future, particularly now with AI, because I think so many things are going to change that don't appear to be large right now, but are going to, you have to kind of sort of think around the corner, look around the corner and imagine what might happen. So it's very much today's economy and today's situation benefits people who can think, you know, 10 moves ahead as to what might happen, how markets might react, players might react in the landscape. We look at, the ability to build a moat, the business can actually build a long-term competitive advantage and moat around itself, that it's not a feature that a bigger company could just go and implement. So we look for those things. And then on the entrepreneur side, this is really interesting, trying to assess somebody as an entrepreneur. And I think as an entrepreneur, I think it's, you know, conviction, passion, confidence, but also the ability to take the most out, like get the most out of the people who are trying to help you, you know, have this, not the sort of like, I don't need help, or I know it all, but, I have confidence, yet I'm going to find the people I respect and pull as much from them as possible. So that sort of mindset, a growth mindset. And then, you know, I think there, ideally it's somebody who has a, particular advantage in that space. You know, maybe for example, for me, it would be commerce and marketplaces are my advantage if I were starting something myself. Because so much muscle memory and recognition of the underlying dynamics. So I would say it's a blend inevitably of the person and the space that they're playing in.
You brought up AI, and I'd love to explore this a little bit. I mean, yes, there's so many unknowns. It's kind of the Wild West right now, and everything seems exciting and also scary at the same time. I think what's scary about it is this, I think this truth that it would replace certain jobs. And so, but I always think like when there is that risk, there's also maybe an opportunity, right? Like what is that AI? What is it that AI cannot replace so that we as humans can go drill down on that? You know, we talked about things like empathy, reading the room, soft skills have really helped you in your comeuppance, in your success. And so as you are looking also, whether it's evaluating a company or even if you're just giving advice to an entrepreneur or anybody who wants to be a leader in business, given where the sort of the world is headed more towards innovation, technology, AI, how can we stay competitive?
Well, I'm not a deep machine learning expert. So I can tell you what I've heard and what I sense is that the machines will learn at an exponential learning rate. And what I'd like to believe is that very truly orthogonal creative thoughts, won't be there, that humans will continue to be able to beat machines at things like creative writing or, creative pursuits, let's say, for example. I think that we already see that things like mathematics or coding, actually, I think those things are going to be actually more quickly replaced. Things that are more where there's an answer, a right answer, those things might actually be replaced more quickly. Yeah. One note though, as we've been thinking about that at the studio, and we spend a lot of time thinking about the creator economy because of my background with Minted, working with, building this global community of almost 20,000 artists and designers. I think a lot about the creator economy and businesses that pertain to that at Heretic. And there are some businesses where we think humans really care that they actually are looking at the output of another human. They care about who is behind the creation. For example, music, people care, who wrote it, who's performing it. If they knew it was an AI written and performed song, would they or would they not be, as excited when the rock star is half the proposition is part of the, or a big part of the proposition of the music is the identity of the artist behind it. Same with potentially fine art, potentially same with op-ed, reading an op-ed piece, an opinion piece. Would we want to read an opinion piece written by an AI? Maybe for fun, maybe as a novelty, a little bit of novelty here and there, but are we really going to fall in love with that creative person behind the piece? The way we, put the poster of the rock star on the wall, so we've just been debating whether the audience wants to actually, even if the AI is able to outperform the human, whether the human consumer wants that or not. So there's a little bit of, I'm not answering your question because I don't know the answer to the question yet, but I just would throw out a question myself.
Well, I get the logic. I don't know how many, Middle Eastern mothers would approve of that, saying, you don't have to get an engineering degree. Why don't you go study ceramics or music? Because that's the future. That's where the secure jobs are. I kind of love that. I love that for the youth to feel like have permission to pursue really a passion now more than ever. It's kind of an interesting way to
look at it. I think so. And I think the liberal arts, I think having a liberal arts, well-rounded education that no matter what crazy twists and turns we sort of face in the next 20, 30 years, that the person will be able to capably change direction quickly on a dime if needed, and be able to not only that, but see things coming, we'll look around the corner, use a multidisciplinary approach to like understand what might happen, and react quickly. I mean, when I went to school, we didn't have, there was no internet. We had no internet connections. There was no email. And I spent my entire career, you know, focused on something that just didn't exist. And I think it's because the liberal arts degree, I went to Williams College, you know, helped me, you know, really helped me quickly see how exciting the opportunity was and what I could potentially do with it. And that's what I would, that might be very valuable moving forward. And AI is basically math, you know?
So we do still need mathematicians to build on that AI. Mm-hmm. I want to wrap here with a little bit on rejection. We all face rejection in our comeuppance, in our youth, and even still, I mean, who's like, every day I'm rejected. but you face some pretty, you know, hard rejections, like your baby ideas, like your big ideas, your baby ideas that became big ideas. Eve.com, you were told women don't buy online. They don't buy cosmetics online. They were underestimated. And yet that was a huge exit. Minted, told terrible idea. Well, we know how that worked out. So how do you reconcile with rejection? Like, when do you know whether I should listen to this or whether this is just someone playing devil's advocate for the sake of playing devil's advocate?
Yet another great question. Well, I'll say first, for all of those out there listening who are rejected, that it doesn't sting any less each time you're rejected, even if you have succeeded. So please realize you're not alone in feeling the sting of the rejection. It really hurts. I think it's very natural for people who are hearing about something that's going to change things to actually go into a more conservative position, which is that's not going to work. So anytime you are pushing to change something that is, you know, it's either a new idea or you're trying to change the status quo, you're going to get a little bit of friction because people don't love change. That's just a natural human thing. So don't feel like it's necessarily a personal thing. And if you're not feeling it, you know, if you weren't feeling it, you may not have been taking enough risk anyway. Potentially it's a good sign that perhaps you're pushing to change things. It's not a bad sign necessarily. I think what I've been trying to do my whole life is think about the person delivering the feedback and whether the person is somebody that I respect in that zone or that sort of arena. So for example, if a person who doesn't play in consumer or retail at all says to me, I don't like using the word lux in an ad, L-U-X-E, we were using the word lux. I don't understand the word lux. Then I would say to myself, you know, I don't think this guy really shops a lot in women's retail, because I've seen the word lux a lot, and a lot of women know what that, you know, sort of understand what that word means. So it just depends on like who's delivering the feedback and what are they expert at. And I think that's what's going on in my head, is I'm putting a filter on things, and I sort of, depending on that, decide how seriously I'm going to take the feedback, if that makes sense.
100%. I think it has to be said, because I often find that we, in our pursuit of getting feedback and advice, we ask all the people. And then really we should be asking like three people who have that Venn diagram intersection of like, knows what you're talking about, is in the audience, has the experience. Yeah. It's not your mom. It's not always like your best friend. It's not maybe even somebody you work with sometimes. So I think being first clear on who is this person, where are they coming from, what is their perspective, and then from there judging
the
feedback.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, tell us what you're excited for next. We got a little bit into Heretic and how it's incubating companies.
Yeah.
What is the innovation? What are the innovations that you're really excited about next?
Well, we are very excited about AI and the possibilities that it creates. You know, it's really reshaping the most fundamental paradigms in which we are going to use the internet, for example, which is where I play, consumer internet. So we're focused on starting companies that use AI for new consumer applications. I think that the ways in which, for example, we navigate the web, the fact that we use search, we look at search results right now, right? We Google something and there's a whole bunch of search results pop out. even the search result, maybe we just prefer to have one result. You know, so basic things that we've grown up over the past 35 years believing about how you interact with the internet, our interface, are going to change pretty drastically. We may not need websites. There may not need to be any websites anymore. There may not be, like, certainly the whole browse structure, the whole user interface, everything that we do right now, everything on your screen right now, everything could potentially change in terms of the design paradigm. So I think that some of the models, underlying models, might become quite commoditized, but the winners might be people who decide or figure out a really, really great way for us to communicate with these new brains that we're forming. Really, it's about people who can figure out the interface layer. And that's a really big opportunity, because it means we could disrupt a lot of businesses. A lot of really big internet businesses could be disrupted. So that's kind of what excites me right now. And completely, this is as big as the first wave of the internet, which was where I started my career way back when. My first business was right at the very beginning, and I'm getting a second opportunity, which is super exciting.
Well, thank you so much for stopping by. You have such a full plate these days, as always, and we so appreciate your advice, your wisdom, sharing a lot about your upbringing and how it's influenced your choices in life. We'll love to have you back anytime.
I'd love that.
We'll be sure to send people to Heretic Ventures. Thank you, Mariam.
Thank you so much for your great questions. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much to Mariam for joining us. Be sure you're subscribing to the show so you never miss a new episode. Friday, we have a fresh Ask Farnoosh, where I'll be answering your money questions. Not too late to send them in. You can email me, farnoosh@somoneypodcast.com, or you can direct message me on Instagram. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope your day is so money. For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or brablem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code PODCAST15. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.